Of all the mundane items that hold our daily lives together, string ranks close to the top. Lowly twine, it seems, evokes a swarm of collected associations, memories, and reveries. Tag along with us on the next Mind's Eye Radio as we follow the trail of the winding tie that binds in G-string or tangled up in jute. That's Mind's Eye Radio. It's radio within reach. This string upon my harp was best beloved. I thought I knew its secrets through and through. Till an old man, whose young eyes lightened blue, neath his white hair, bent over and moved his fingers up and down, and broke the wire to such a laddered music, rung on rung, as from the patriarch's pillow skyward sprung, crowded with wide-flung wings and feet of fire. O vibrant heart, so metally tuned and strung that any untaught hand can draw from thee one clear gold note that makes the tired years young, what of the time when love had whispered me where slept thy nodes and my hand pausefully gave to the dim harmonics voice and tongue. Harmonics by William Vaughan Moody. Of all the mundane items that hold our daily lives together, string ranks close enough to the top that it's inspired today's Mind's Eye Radio writers to go to great lengths to examine it. Lowly twine, it seems, evokes a swarm of collected associations, memories, and reveries. As we mull over the topic, one member was even inspired to expostulate, "Gee, string!" That got the ball rolling. Tag along with us today as we follow the trail of the winding tie that binds in G-string, or tangled up in jute. John Morgan muses about the myriad meanings of string in Symphony for Strings.
String is a funny thing. A ball of string is the oddest thing of all. This string all gathered together in a ball because it is the most efficient method for collecting it. String. A ball of string. String is not something people sing about. No one has ever gotten lyrical about string. No one has ever written an ode to string. There are odes to spring, but no odes to string, at least none that spring to mind. We are speaking of string. String is a thing. Not the strings that sing, but its more lowly cousin, the strings that bind, the strings that tie. Here apron strings tie in with our theme, but most of all we are dealing with string that comes in a ball. There is something called string theory that theoretical physicists use to explain elementary matter, but here we are dealing with a matter even more elementary than that, a simple ball of string. String is also used to make a cat's cradle, a kind of top-notch optical topological illusion. String runs through much of life and art. There are puppet strings. To the Greeks, Ariadne held the thread of life. Theseus took a thread with him into the Minotaur's maze. Some people are always trying to pull strings. Some people are high-strung. People get strung along. Some people get strung out. People have been strung up, although more accurately they are strung up with rope, not string, roped into it, lassoed by the gallows, or a tree, as the case might be, to make a bit of gallows humor. Of course, there is also twine, which is neither string nor rope, but in between is twine, a sort of hybrid of string and rope. Oh, pardon this peroration, for it was in fact a story I wished to tell, and I hope that by the time my story is told, I shall have tied up all the loose ends, and left no part, party, or participle dangling. If you have followed the thread thus far, it has strung you along to the beginning of our story, for this is a story of Jacob Paddy O'Rourke, who began one day collecting string to relax from work. He began casually, Absently tying little bits of string he frowned around into larger pieces with sheep's head knots. He kept tying these together against the day when he might have a need for a handy bit of string. He began to roll it into a ball, which gradually grew larger and larger, and Jacob realized he was powerless to stop it from growing. It was out of his control. The thing had taken on a life of its own. He was addicted to collecting string. After a few years, he had to roll it out of the garage and build a shed for it. He built a large shed so the string would have room to grow. After a few years, someone from the newspaper wrote an article about it. A man on the other side of the world, a man who also collected string, read about this and began collecting more string, in order that he might have the largest ball of string in the world. So the string race began. It was competition in its purest form, the epitome of the noble spirit of endeavor. They competed to see who had the biggest, as men do. But the poor fellow was no match for Jacob. Eventually he threw in the towel. Jacob's ball by then was 9 feet tall, and the biggest ball of string in the world. Women wrote to him from all over with proposals of marriage. He decided a helpmate would be good to have to share the burden of owning the world's largest ball of string. So he picked the most likely prospect and married Emily, expecting to settle down to a life of domestic bliss. But it was not to be. Soon she was criticizing him at every turn. She even began to mock his ball of string. What a useless thing it was, she said. Who needed it anyway? What a waste of time collecting all this string. It was a blind and futile enterprise. She grew more quarrelsome and critical every day. One day, she went to the shed and rolled the ball of string onto the lawn. Then she rolled it down the driveway and pushed it into the street. The string began to unwind. She kept rolling, pushing and rolling down to the corner. She kept pushing straight on across town to the city limits. She rolled on into the country, unwinding all the way, and didn't stop until she was 20 miles away and into the next town, and the final end of the ball of string unwound. Then she sat down and cried. "What have I done?" she sobbed. "I've ruined Jacob's life work. Our marriage lies unwound on the road to nowhere." When Jacob came home that day, he found no Emily home, and his ball of string was gone. Looking in the shed, he found only the end of the ball of string, running down the driveway out into the street. "My ball of string," he exclaimed, "it has escaped. I should have known better than to cage a wild thing. I should have known I could not tame it. Of course it would break loose and escape. Why could I not foresee it?" Then he sat down at the kitchen table and wept. He brought out the bottle of brandy from the cabinet and drank himself into a stupor. He was awakened the next afternoon by a knock at the door. He stumbled, unshaven and disheveled, to answer it. There was Emily, and beside her was a ball of string. "Oh, Jacob," she cried, "the ball of string, it escaped, but I followed it to the next town. I tracked it down and brought it back to you." "Oh, Emily, my little angel," Jacob proclaimed, as they embraced. They rolled the ball of string into the shed and went to bed. Jacob often wondered after that what he would ever do without his Emily, for she was a woman true and understanding, the kind of reliable wife he needed to keep his life from unraveling into a koodle-moodle. And so they lived happily ever after. This is John Morgan for Mind's Eye Radio.
Oh,
In the following poem, Pieces of String Too Short to Use, Norma Gay Pruitt is reminded that like negligible bits of twine, we can find delight in birdsong, art, and other perfectly impractical and useless endeavors.
Pieces of string too short to use. Wren song, loud, proclaiming, I'm here, I'm here. Now you must flee, you other males. Such a little chassis, so much motor. Perched outside the door of the house, he investigates each year, then does not occupy. Asking price too high, perhaps, a pile of sticks. But the missus gets to choose, and I have watched her flit in and out while he swells his tiny cheeks and shouts, it's perfect, it's really a perfect house. She has her doubts. Sparrows are another thing. I feel guilty that I cherish one small shouting bird over another, neither objectively better nor more handsome. Why does the sparrow's chatter displease? Why does it have an annoying ring compared to the other? These thoughts are pieces of string too short to use. So are the flowers, the bright, shouting lilacs that when amassed can smell as strong as cheap perfume, but which please me inordinately. I nearly swoon each spring when they and the tulips and the lily of the valley shout their sexiness to the blue, blue sky. But why should I care? I am not a bee. Their willingness to be pollinated cannot influence me. It's that they please, like the twine my mother-in-law uses to tie her packages in the mail. I'm sure the P.O. has its own opinion of her care, and the knots are hard, raising expectation of what kind of gems are in there. It's the string. I confess I hate to cut it because it then becomes something I can never save, bits of string too short to use. This is Norma Gay Pruitt for Mind's Eye Radio.
In our throwaway society, we Americans sometimes forget that there was a time when something as expendable as string would have been carefully hoarded, not to mention scraps of fat, cloth, and even newspaper. Judith Zuckerman remembers it for us.
Spring, 1944. I clutched the string, wrapped round and round my bundle of newspapers. I walked along Chicago's Drake Avenue, resting my burden on my knee at the corner. Then I grabbed the string, but was afraid it would break. Hoisting the papers up, I hugged them tight in my thin 7-year-old arms and didn't stop until the Central Park Avenue stoplight. I crossed the street passing Dominick's, a neighborhood grocery, and rested my slippery package on my right hip. 2 blocks done, 4 more to go. My arms ached. 3 blocks, 4 blocks, the string cut into my hands. I dropped my newspapers and sat down on top of them. My bony shoulders drooped. How would I ever make it to school? 5 blocks. I could see the school playground, but the entrance door was still 1 block away. My steps got slower and slower. Inside Ryerson School, I plunked the newspapers down at the top of the stairs to the basement and pushed them down one stair at a time. At the end of a long hall, 2 8th graders weighed my heavy load and wrote a number on a piece of paper. 44 pounds. 44 pounds to add to my 2nd grade room total. 44 pounds for the war effort. This is Judith Zuckerman for Mind's Eye Radio.
Perhaps we all know someone who's tidy to the point of compulsiveness. Paul Thompson rolls out a possible string of consequences in Loose Ends.
Mr. and Mrs. Neat lived in a well-kept little house on Neat Street in Neatsville in the state of tidiness. One day, Mr. Neat came home from work in some distress because he had been reprimanded for lack of neatness in his work. But all he said to his wife was, "I need a piece of string about a yard long." Being a very neat person, she promptly found the string in the part of the kitchen drawer devoted to such things. Mr. Neat disappeared down into his basement workshop. Presently, she heard a loud blast, and, after she finished unloading the dishwasher, she went down to investigate. Mrs. Neat found that Mr. Neat had spread newspapers over his workshop floor, fixed his shotgun in a vise, and arranged the length of string so he could pull the trigger while seated with his head directly in line with the muzzle. He now was sprawled on the floor with his head blown off. Fortunately, the newspapers had caught most of the mess, and the remainder of the spatters could easily be washed off the wall behind him. Mrs. Neat went to work. Soon, everything was in order. Mr. Neat was stretched out on a plastic drop cloth with a shower cap placed over the stump of his neck to prevent drips. Mrs. Neat removed his clothing, cleaned up the exudations that result from a sudden violent end, and dressed him in clean boxer shorts. She carefully removed the shotgun from the vise, cleaned and oiled it, and placed it back in its cabinet as Mr. Neat had taught her to do. She put his dirty clothing in the clothes washer and began the cycle. Finally, she took the length of string and made a little coil and placed it back in the kitchen drawer, because you never knew when you'd need a piece of string. Mrs. Neat, as a good citizen, then called the police. The patrolman congratulated her on how well she had tidied up the scene, saying that if everybody did the same, the police would have less work to do and taxes would be lower. "I'm afraid I don't know what to do next," she said. "I really don't want the neighbors talking." The patrolman suggested placing Mr. Neat in a trash bag, and he helped Mrs. Neat carry him up the basement stairs, out the front door, and to the curb. The trash disposal truck soon picked up Mr. Neat and deposited him in the city dump, where he would soon become a productive citizen again, generating methane for the local power plant. Unfortunately, the string of consequences from Mr. Neat's original act of carelessness at work was not ended. He had been a technician in a biowarfare laboratory, and due to his lack of neatness, had been contaminated by a strain of germs called quick-acting green anthrax, or quax for short. Within a few hours after his untimely demise, Mrs. Neat and the patrolman fell ill with high fevers and bright green spots. They were rushed to the hospital, where they infected the staff and other patients before dying of convulsions. The outbreak was kept quiet by authorities to avoid alarming the public, and state and federal hazmat teams moved in. Within a few days, the outbreak was contained, with only about 5,000 deaths in Neatsville and its suburbs. The story given out to the public was that this was an unusual form of flu picked up from pet toads imported from Venezuela. Meanwhile, the FBI and various other federal agencies, too secret to be named, traced the string of consequences to its origin, courtesy of a candy striper at the hospital who had talked with Mrs. Neat before she herself caught quacks. Before she expired, a man in a silver suit and helmet interviewed her. Eventually, the director of the FBI came into the president's office and said, "I'm pleased to report that we have erased all evidence of what actually happened except for this." He pulled out a length of string about 3 feet long, obtained from the kitchen drawer of the Neat household. "So that's it," the president said. "I trust it's been decontaminated." "Yes, sir." "Thank you. I'll take care of this." "Very good, sir." After the FBI chief had departed, the president picked up a golden cigarette lighter, gift of the Sultan of Umba. The president lit the lower end of the string. The flame crept up until he dropped the string into the golden ashtray that was the companion gift from the Sultan. Soon, nothing remained but a length of ash, which the president dumped in the wastebasket. "Well," the president said, "so much for loose ends." This is Paul Thompson's Evil Twine for Mind's Eye Radio.
For every little fault that you have, say I've got 3 or 4.
The human little faults you do have just make me love you more.
Because you're such an angel, that's why I'm sure you'll do. So until the day that one comes along, I know just what I'll do. I'll string along with you.
Okay, so let's say that you grant that string is useful, and probably a good thing to hang on to. But sometimes the things that come in strings take us to the very edge of the known universe, as Lewis Rawl explains.
Hello, Dr. Stringlove here with the latest from the Mind's Eye Radio Science Corner. Remember the telephones you made from tin cans and string? If there was enough tension on the string, a whisper into one can could be heard clearly in the other. The secret was vibrations of the string, powered by speaking into one can, then transformed back into sound by the other. Now, forget about the cans, and tie the ends of the vibrating string together into a loop. Then throw it in the air to undulate in the breeze. The result is a model for what the string theory people think are the ultimate constituents of the universe. The strings of physics are described by equations similar to the ones for your vibrating loop. These theoretical strings can join up to make quarks, which make elementary particles, and finally, everything else. Thus, the whole universe is made of string, so to speak. String theory works better if there are extra dimensions in which to vibrate. Extra dimensions in the universe are a good idea. They give ways to form more connections and explain where all those coincidences and premonitions come from. We don't see into these dimensions because light is confined to the 4 space-time dimensions of ordinary experience. Also, you can't say other dimensions are big or small. You can only move a ruler around in the 3 space dimensions to measure something. You can't stick a yardstick into time to see how long you've been listening to me. All these dimensions are joined, like time is connected to space to make the present. The one force shared between our tangible world and other dimensions seems to be gravity. This brings us to black holes, which are objects with such great gravitational force that nothing, including light, can escape. We can't see them, but the astronomical ones can be detected by their gravity and the havoc they create sucking in matter and energy around them. They are greedy. The Earth would have to be compressed into a marble with a diameter of 3/4 of an inch to become one. The surface of this sphere would be the event horizon, the region of no return. But hold the string phone. It turns out black holes can radiate. This shouldn't surprise, because a toy box of quantum mechanics holds things like cats that are alive and dead at the same time, and other goodies. Anyway, Stephen Hawking said black holes are hot, and even the old-fashioned laws of thermodynamics demand black-body radiation or go to jail. Furthermore, black holes get hotter as they get smaller and radiate their mass away faster. Remember, Uncle Al told us that mass and energy are equivalent. E equals MC squared, he used to say. Accordingly, a 1,000-ton black hole would last about a second and explode like a 1,000,000-megaton bomb. The big greedy ones at the centers of galaxies are cold and will be around a long time. So, why talk about extra dimensions and black holes? According to a recent article in Scientific American, the authors think it might be possible to make black holes with a machine in Europe called the Large Hadron Collider, LHC for short. It is expected to go into operation in 2007. If you smash two particles together with enough energy, it confines their mass to a small space, the recipe for a black hole. However, the LHC is woefully too weak, by a factor of 1,000,000,000,000,000, to make a black hole in the classical way, like crushing the Earth into a marble. This is where extra dimensions can help. Ordinarily, if you cut the distance between objects in two, the gravitational force between them increases by a factor of 4. If there are 9 dimensions and the objects are close enough together, you get a factor of 256. This might be enough to push a lucky hit into a black hole. The authorities assure us these holes will be harmless and won't eat up the Earth. They will wake out of existence in 100 trillion trillionth of a second, and only their debris will prove they ever were created. Furthermore, they say cosmic rays banging in from outer space at close to the speed of light already produce 100 or so harmless black holes in the atmosphere every year, but they have no evidence for this. Well, this is current theory, and science teaches us that there are usually defects, small or otherwise, in the wisdom of the day. Odds are the LHC will not produce any black holes, or if it does, they won't be greedy. Production of a greedy black hole will only be pretty to observers far, far away. If they exist, we won't. This is Dr. Stringlove, still having to sit in the science corner of Mind's Eye Radio until Kelly lets me go out and play with the gang at the physics lab.
Fran Rawl found that most people had an answer when she asked them, "What do you think of when you hear the word string?" They ran from musical instruments to bits of string, balls of string, tying things up, marionettes, string theory. But she's proud of thinking of DNA and umbilical cord all by herself. So here is her string theory.
Like marionettes, we hang twisting from the live strings of our own destiny. Our DNA, the threads back to our ancestors beyond time. String holds the whole world together. String came as civilization came, weaving many parts together. Clothes, blankets, baskets, boats, houses. The tie that binds, the knotted connections between us. A string wall drawn in a circle, shutting out the strangers, closing in the real people, our own special set of strangers. Tie a string around my finger to remind me to call you on the tin can phone, but you have to pull the string tight so we can hear well. All tied up by the tie that binds, the thread that runs so true, the strings of the heart. The apron strings of the umbilical cord that tied you to the inside where it was safe. The newspaper stringer calling us into the labyrinth. Keep a hank of sinew safe in your pocket, because the time will come when things fall apart, everything unravels, and we are all strung out, waiting for the knitted sleeve of night to put us back together again. So we remain, all tied up by a string of events, or else we become unstrung. This is Fran Rahl, tying things together for Mind's Eye Radio.
You've heard many variations on the basic theme of string, but don't break the chain. Stick around for the second half of our show as we hear how memories from the painful to the fanciful are evoked by a teeny piece of twine. In today's show, Gee, String, or Tangled Up in Jute. Not all connections are so tangible. Poet Esther Cameron finds a thread both in its literal and metaphorical manifestations in an ancient ritual.
The poem I'm going to read was written after a ritual with members of Shaare Shamayim, a progressive Jewish congregation in Madison. The ritual was based on traditions connected with Rachel's tomb and also with the graves of certain rabbis, where pilgrims come with prayers for healing and receive a piece of red string. I guess it is because red is the color of life, and life is often compared to a thread. And there is also the idea of the soul as a thread leading back to the ultimate source of life. In the paintings of the Israeli artist Nahum Arbel, there is often a thread leading from the landscape to a city in the clouds that symbolizes the spiritual world. As far as I know, the Sha'arei Shamayim ritual was only enacted once, about 10 years ago. But I still have my piece of that red string. It is the kind of thing that you don't throw away. Healing Circle. In the half-light of Jackie's living room, we crowd into a circle, leaving open the space where each of us will lie at length. Yael unwraps a skein of scarlet yarn, telling of how the women walk and wind threads around Rachel's tomb in Bethlehem, where she lies waiting for her children's return. The yarn begins to travel round the circle. As one by one we grasp and pass it on, an umbilical cord, says someone, and we laugh, an artery from which the new bright blood flows from a heart now beating to each one. Invisible, it flows beneath the words of prayer and telling, as each one relates their version of the story of our exile, in flesh that feels but its own wound alone, in mind bound to the flesh, divided with it, until the space within the circle fills with the dark matter of our pain and fear. Now, in the middle, one lies down full length, becomes the body of our pain and fear, becomes the body of our exiled wholeness, on which the rest lay hands and cry to God to heal him, her, us, all, and then arises, another one becomes the one we pray for. And when the central space again is empty, we say the Kaddish and at last let go. Shall we divide the thread, give each a piece? We keep it whole and roll it in a box. But from the same skein, Yael cuts a length for each of us to wear around our arm, sensing each other, sensing, as we move along the separate pathways of our weeks, that we stay roped together like mountaineers, each of us made more fearless, yet more careful, by this connecting thread, by this new life. I'm Esther Cameron from Mind's Eye Radio.
Some of the most beautiful musical expressions are those composed for strings. Witness violinists Serena and Brianna Berkowitz in their interpretation of La Réjouissance by Handel. Thank you. String can attach the heart to the things of this world, as writer Greg Landretti notices in The Reminder.
Fiona's eyes were fixed on the steady cadence of the string attached to the old man's finger. Up and down, up and down. She was a slim cat, just 2 years old, but aware of her presence like a movie star passing a random mirror. She had wandered in from a lilac hedge in April and bonded with the old man within a week. It was now October, and she lay on the side table, as usual, hindquarters high, her front paws tucked under her chest, and her tail wrapped alongside and disappearing under her belly. He sat on the smooth vinyl seat of an oak-frame chair. His back was arched forward, and his head sagged, as if too heavy for his body. His eyes, like his mouth, were hanging half open. His hands rested on his thighs, and he gazed at the off-white string tied with a neat bow to the index finger of his right hand. The finger moved up and down in a steady rhythm, and the string followed along behind with the bow tails landing against his brown polyester slacks. Fiona didn't say much. She just watched with steady, unfocused eyes, like those of a guard at a watchtower. Even when the nurse threw open the curtains in the morning, and Fiona's pupils silently went to narrow slits, her expression remained unchanged. For the past 3 months, the routine was the same. After a quick bath, the nurse dressed the old man, combed his hair, made sure he was comfortable in the chair, and then gently tied the string around his finger. Up and down, up and down, like the branch of a willow caught in an oscillating breeze. The nurse thought that he recalled events of his life, as an occasional grin or raised eyebrow sent a sparkle across the room. She watched Fiona catch the thought as she rolled her head as if being stroked behind the ear. Over the past several years, cats had come and gone. Most of them wandered from room to room looking for a slice of attention from the residents. Fiona was one of those odd cats who selected her own resident. The old man belonged to Fiona. There was no question about it. Neither cats nor old men need many words for expression. They both were alone in the world, but their unspoken bond erased any loneliness. It was hard to determine the degree to which the old man acknowledged Fiona's attention, but he willingly embraced the reminder on his index finger for 2 hours every day. At mid-morning, the nurse would put her hand on his shoulder, and leaning close to his ear, she would tell him that it was time to feed his friend. Then, very methodically, she would untie the string from his wrinkled and bent finger. Fiona knew this routine, and her ears independently scanned for activity, as her tail swung in gentle arcs like a pendulum in a grandfather's clock. It was clear to the nurse that Fiona did not want to miss any of the action, limited as it was. The old man would adjust his head slowly and gaze at the loose string now lying on the table, and the corners of his mouth would lift slightly like a smile emerging from a deep shadow. He would lean to the right, and with a shaky hand, he would carefully scoop a cup of food from the plastic bin into a small dish. The nurse would place the cup back into the bin as he settled into his chair. With a quiet sigh of deep satisfaction, he would lower his eyes and wait. After the reminder was set aside and things settled down, Fiona would step lightly across the brown polyester slacks, wave her tail across the old man's stubbled chin, produce a quiet and thoughtful meow, and bound to the floor for her lunch. It is remarkable when such a simple thing as a string can bring meaning to someone's life. This is Greg Landretti for Mind's Eye Radio. Thank you.
The thought of strings brings back rather mixed memories for poet Oscar Morelis.
String. The only time a man held my private package, I was resting back on the examination table at the Southside Health Clinic. They had already given me a sedative, asked if I would bring someone to drive me home. And although I felt as if I was drunk, I was getting ready for my first surgery. And the main thing I remember is that the doctor pulled out a 12-inch piece of string, tied up my two testicles as if they were a pair of hot air balloons tangled up. And for the life of me, I don't know why he used the string. Isn't there such thing as a vasectomy clamp? Or was the string a symbol of me hanging up my parenting ability? This is Oscar Morelis for Mind's Eye Radio.
Sing with the strings of my heart. Skies seem blue again. What else could I do again but keep repeating through and through, I love you, love you. I still recall the thrill. I guess I always will. I hope we'll never depart. See you with your lips to mine, a rhapsody divine. Sing, oh, 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 with the strings of my heart.
Entwined.
Poet Kathy Miner.
Don't you dare string me along. Try to tug on my heartstrings or expect me to open my purse strings. And you'd better not string me up or feed me string cheese or strings of spaghetti while I'm wearing a string of beads. You have to be first string to do that, or at least know how to pull strings and get something done. Me, I'm just a string bean, playing in a string quartet, sporting a string tie, and hoping not to get strung out. Hopelessly Entangled, this is Kathy Miner for Mind's Eye Radio.
We were dancing at Jenny's wedding. The best man flirting with you on the slide. You were quick to reassure me. You never fall for that kind of guy. Now I've got a string around my finger to remind me how it felt when you strung me along while you were snaring someone else. He was trying hard to impress you with his Casanova bag of tricks. And we both laughed when you said he's not as special as he thinks. Now I've got a string around my finger to remind me how it felt when you strung me along while you were snaring someone else. Now I think about how we met and all the clues I didn't see. I'm sure you told your old boyfriend you never fall for a guy like me. Then I saw you laughing with him You tried to hide in the wedding crowd. I knew you'd tell me it was over the very next time I asked you out. Now I've got a string around my finger to remind me how it felt when you strung me along while you were snaring someone else. I got a string around my finger. I got a string around my finger. I got a string.
This is Lynn Patrick Smith with Janet Smith for Mind's Eye Radio.
Greg Williard's pastime is following the threads of infinite possible stories. Some of their beginnings are unwound in Seam Ripper. I'm at my desk, using a seam ripper to remove yet another corporate logo, this one sewn into the flap of an otherwise beautifully anonymous black shoulder strap bag. The pulled threads gather and curl in my lap. They look like the long, spiraling ash of an incense stick. There's probably some form of divination that could read the future in these threads, but they're corporate threads. My son's on the couch, ritualistically tugging at the tufts of yarn in a quilt. He's done this since he was a baby, twisting and twirling until the yarn stands upright to make what he calls the blanket people. Eventually they come out. Loose quilt pieces have marked his trail for years. My wife's sewing machine is across the room. It's 50s Art Deco, a faff, a big, brooding, industrial sphinx of a thing that's worked without a hitch for 40 years. Seen from the front, the spool sits on a spindle that's up and to the left. It could be a thought balloon above the faff's hood-like head, which is part 1940s Rocketman helmet, part Eisenstein Alexander Nevsky armor, its two horizontal eye slots casting a warm electric light on the needleworks below. On second thought, if the spool is the faff's thought balloon, then its thread thoughts aren't ballooning out, but going back into its head. Then our thoughts would be thinking us. Penelope is in front of her loom, pulling out the day's work on Odysseus's funeral shroud, stalling before she has to choose his replacement. Maybe she has sexy daydreams about a skinny dip with Odysseus in blue Aegean foam to speed up the unraveling. Maybe she's thinking of the blue pulsing artery in the warm throat of her lover, a servant girl from Crete, and the unraveling is slowing down. Ariadne is outside the maze. Depending on what story you believe, she's giving Theseus the idea of unwinding a ball of twine behind him to follow back out of the maze, or using the twine as a measuring tool to calculate the layout of the maze. The first story sounds like he would have thought it up himself. I don't know how the second story would work. These have just been a few handy hints from the makers of Mind's Eye Radio on things to do with string, or ways to think about the ties that bind. Some were straight hanks, some maybe a little loopy, but all were offered in the spirit of sharing. Perhaps we started you thinking about the strings that make up your own lives. If so, we were happy to string you along. That's our show. Thanks for listening to G String, or Tangled Up in Jute. The show was produced by Kelly Warren and co-produced by Gay Davidson-Zilski. Today's Pearls of Wisdom were brought to you by musicians Serena and Brianna Berkowitz, writers Esther Cameron, Greg Lindretti, Kathy Miner, Oscar Morales, John Morgan, Norma Gay Pruitt, Fran Rawl, Lewis Rawl, Lynn Patrick Smith, Paul Thompson, Greg Williard, and Judith Zuckerman. Original music by Barbara Chusett. A note of apology for our show on the theme of chickens, we inadvertently forgot to give credit to the sermon excerpt by the Reverend Martha Ann Englert of Grace Episcopal Church, Madison, Wisconsin. We regret the omission. For more information about Mind's Eye Radio, go to www.mindseyeaudio.com. Or listen to past shows at www.radioforall.net, and that's number 4 for 4. That about ties things up. I'm Greg Williard. Till next time, best wishes from Mind's Eye Radio. And if you'd like to be tied up, just contact me, Greg Williard, at g_Williard@yahoo.com. Best wishes from Mind's Eye Radio.